At the end of the Second World War, Europe lay in ruins. Across the continent, surviving political leaders looked at the aftermath of the deadliest war in history and vowed that such a conflict should never happen again. In 1946, Britain's wartime leader Winston Churchill called for the creation of a United States of Europe. And in 1949, a Council of Europe was established by 12 states to debate how to reconcile and reconstruct the continent. These were the first steps in a process that would eventually lead to the creation of one of the most powerful political entities in the world today, the European Union.
You're listening to Loud Numbers, a data sonification podcast. I'm Miriam Quick, and my co-host Duncan Gear and I have put together a collection of stories made from data and sound. Each episode, we'll explore a new story through data by creating a piece of music from it. This week, a symphony of bureaucracy.
There was a lot of enthusiasm for the Council of Europe in its early years. It drafted a European Convention on Human Rights, which was enforced by an international court that could hold governments to account, a huge step forward in international justice. It also welcomed West Germany into the fold, beginning the process of post-war reconciliation. But some of its most enthusiastic backers were frustrated by the slow pace of progress. The Assembly's first president, Belgian statesman Paul-Henri Spaak, resigned in disappointment in 1951 after proposals for a collective European political authority were rejected.
Around the same time, French Foreign Minister Robert Schuman had an idea. Seeing the importance of the coal and steel industries in modern warfare, he proposed a canny plan to integrate those industries across countries, creating common interests and making it much harder for them to be co-opted by warmongering politicians. After a rousing speech from Schuman, six nations, including France and West Germany, signed the Treaty of Paris, creating the European Coal and Steel Community.
Across the Atlantic, there was great support for this initiative from American Secretary of State George C. Marshall. His plan, the Marshall Plan, funneled tens of billions of dollars into rebuilding the continent, much of it directed through the European Coal and Steel Community, giving this young organization a lot of power. Again, though, those pushing for the greatest possible integration were disappointed. There were failed attempts at creating defense and political communities in 1952. It wasn't until 1956, in Venice, that leaders were able to agree on cooperation on economic issues. In 1957, they signed the Treaty of Rome, establishing a European economic community to create a customs union and reduce trade barriers, and Euratom, which shared the costs of the development of nuclear energy.
During the 60s and 70s, Europe grew slowly closer. The three communities, coal and steel, atomic and economic, were combined into one, and more countries joined the fold. In the mid-1980s, a European anthem was adopted, Beethoven's Ode to Joy, as well as a European flag. It wasn't until 1992, in the wake of the fall of the Iron Curtain, that the European Union finally came into existence through the signing of the Maastricht Treaty. This sparked a further huge wave of unification. The Schengen Agreement in 1994 allowed free movement of goods, money, services and people between European states, while the European Monetary Institute established a currency union, which led to the replacement of national currencies with the euro in 2002.
Today, the European Union is a truly unique political entity and an economic, diplomatic and cultural superpower. It's a massive achievement for a continent that, just a handful of decades ago, was tearing itself and the world around it to pieces. But as its history shows, perhaps the European Union's greatest achievement is that all this has been done through democratic lawmaking, not through armed force. That lawmaking results in a lot of paperwork, and it's this glorious bureaucracy that we wanted to celebrate when we came up with the idea to do an episode on the European Union in the same year that our home country, Britain, left that union.
Much was made in the British press in the lead-up to the Brexit referendum of Europe's so-called inefficiencies. But actually, it's an impressively efficient body. Just 30,000 civil servants support a population of about 500 million people. Compared to China, which employs 10 million civil servants for 1.5 billion people, or the United States' 3 million civil servants for a third of a billion people. That's not quite a fair comparison because it doesn't include the civil servants employed by individual European countries. But it gives you some idea that the European Union is hardly the sprawling, many-tentacled monster that it's often perceived to be.
And we're not here to count civil servants. We're here to make music out of data, and specifically data on the European Union's laws. In this episode's Sonification, we took a database of all of the laws ever passed by any precursor of the European Union, a whopping 142,036 of them, from the European coal and steel community all the way up to the present day. And we created a piece of classical music that reflects the amount of lawmaking going on over time.
We turned that into a fugue, a compositional technique where two or more melodic lines interweave around each other. Each line begins with a short, specific string of notes, known as a subject. This subject is then repeated by every subsequent melodic line as it comes in, often in different keys, or sometimes even turned upside down. Fugues were especially popular in the 18th century in Europe. Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven were all big fugue fans, and wrote many of their own.
Our fugue takes a rather different sonification approach to the other episodes of Loud Numbers. There's just one encoding, the number of laws made each year, which is mapped to the number of melodic lines in the fugue. When there are only a few laws being made, there are few melodies. When there are lots of laws, there are lots of melodies. It's a pretty simple mapping.
But that doesn't mean it's a simple piece of music. Weaving different melodies together so they're all in tune with each other and sounding good is no easy task. At the peak of European lawmaking, in 1989, we've got 8 different melodic lines playing at the same time.
We also nodded to the European Union with our choice of subject for the fugue. You'll recognise it as the first part of the European anthem, Beethoven's Ode to Joy. Here's how it sounds. And if you're wondering, here's how that subject sounds played upside down. Finally, a quick note that we've chosen to play this classical piece on synthesizers in tribute to electronic musician Wendy Carlos. Her 1968 album, Switched on Bach, which featured music by Johann Sebastian Bach performed on Moog synthesizers, paved the way for the widespread acceptance of electronic music. Loud Numbers might not have existed without it.
So that's it. You're ready to hear the whole thing. This is A Symphony of Bureaucracy.
Thank you.
personification was created by Miriam Quick and Duncan Gear. To make it, we used Google Sheets to wrangle the data, Sibelius to turn it into music, and Logic Pro X to turn that music into a track.
You can find all of the numbers that we used to create the track in our show notes, and a final version without our commentary on all good streaming services. Search for Loud Numbers.
And the biggest of thank yous to the founders of the European Union and for those who work for it today.
On the next episode, we transform data into silence rather than sound.